The following is a production of Alabama Public Radio News.
We're always going to remember what it was like before. Of course, you know, the new, you know, generation coming up won't know the difference, but I remember when, you know, that day where I was.
This thing looks like it might be over 1/2 mile wide. Goodness, look at that.
That is huge.
This is a...
If you're down around Kalu...
Yeah, that's a confirmed tornado on the ground. Guys, are we going to need a retreat or what?
We had been tracking it all day. We actually got to see the whole storm come and then touch down and make its entire path.
Hey, I've got plenty of video on this, but... No, we're getting ready to have to run.
This is a very large and sizable tornado coming right towards the city of Tuscaloosa and the University of Alabama campus. Again, I'm Chief.
The sound was the loudest thing that I've ever heard. It was so loud that I couldn't hear it anymore. It became so loud, and mud and dirt and dust were smashing around, flying at us from all directions down there.
Hey, we're fine, y'all.
The smell of gas was everywhere. You could see people beginning to walk down the middle of University Boulevard. In a distance, you could see the frantic nature of people running to certain areas.
We just lost things, buildings. You know, I look across the street and I think about all these people that lost their homes. And that's the tough part.
At this time, we ask that you take a moment to remember the 43 individuals who lost their lives on April 27, as each name is read.
Christian A. McNeil, to Christiana Dixon, Zycaria McShan, Perry Blake Peak.
Every tornado warning brings back all the memories from that day, because none of us want to have to go talk to parents who can't find their children, or explain to a husband why their wife is not coming home.
Is it 5 years? Oh, my gosh.
Steve Miller's come a long way since April 27th, 2011.
Yeah, we're standing right by the front door here, Pat, and that door would have been unavailable in the old house because it was totally blown out and covered up with roof stuff.
Miller lives in Tuscaloosa's Hillcrest neighborhood. His new home has lots of windows and plenty of art on the walls. You might not think anything was out of the ordinary. But the first time APR visited here, things were a lot different.
All we could hear were sirens, and then at night, houses going up in flames around. You know, we could see that there were houses burning, and that was really the only light except the distant light of the city. And it felt really like the end of the world. My neighbor, two houses down, went far into his backyard and found a young lady wrapped around one of his trees. She had passed away.
That's Miller just hours after the tornado hit in 2011. He shared those moments with APR.
The sound was the loudest thing that I've ever heard. It was so loud that I couldn't hear it anymore. It became so loud, and mud and dirt and dust were smashing around, flying at us from all directions down there. How's that going over there? Good.
It took 13 months for him to rebuild. APR stopped by again in 2012 to see how things were going.
I'm gonna carry this all clocked down right now. I'd forgotten about it, and I want to save it.
Finally, we have somewhere where we can have puppies now with this new place. And that noise in the background is Tango. She's an African gray parrot. She was actually in the basement with us when the tornado hit. I was holding her as hard as I could on my shoulder, and she was silent for about 2 days after that tornado.
Hello.
Like a lot of parrots, Tango imitates what she hears. If Miller needs a reminder of what he went through over these past 5 years, there's always this. That's not a construction truck backing up. It's Tango. And the reminders don't stop there.
This little piece of marble here that's probably an inch square is the only thing that's left now from the old kitchen floor. I mean, this I keep this by the window here to remind me.
However, even 5 years later, the impact isn't over.
The sound of wind, even though our house is new, it blasts, you know, because there are no trees. It really gets on my nerves big time. And we've had to go into the basement a couple of times since then, since this house has been new, because of tornado warnings. And it scares the pieces out of us now. When that happens, we're scared. Yeah.
The tornado's coming down, 2059.
See, last unit advising they have babies trapped, 10-9, your location and your unit number.
I can't hear your address because there are no addresses anymore.
At that point, we understood this was going to be something like we'd never seen in the history of our city.
You could look north and south and east and west, and you really couldn't see any familiar landmarks. They were all gone.
Mayor Walt Maddox and Mayor Mike Seibert sound like they're talking about one disaster. They're not.
All right, this is Alabama's ABC 3340, and the news is weather. You are looking at a live, large, violent tornado wrapped in rain approaching downtown Tuscaloosa. This is a
It's a massive tornado, massive destruction.
Up to 200-mile-an-hour winds ripping a four-mile path, destroying 75% of Joplin, Missouri in just 10 minutes.
3 weeks after Tuscaloosa's storm, 150 residents of Joplin, Missouri died when an EF5 twister tore through their town. Mike Seibert is the mayor.
And all of a sudden, I'd come to a five-lane road, and I had absolutely no idea where I was.
It looked like hell on earth.
Judy Petty remembers that day. She owns Frank's Tavern on Main Street in Joplin.
People walking, people crying. It was awful, awful.
Judy Petty's story is a familiar one to Brian Sanders. He owns the Express Oil Change Auto Shop on 15th Street in Tuscaloosa. That's where he was in 2011 when that tornado hit his town. It was just about closing time.
So we're just sitting here, and all of a sudden they said, hey, wait a minute, this thing's turning, and then we saw it coming from behind McDonald's.
Sanders and his staff hid in a grease pit until the storm passed. When they came out, his business was gone.
The only thing I remember thinking was, what am I going to do now? You know, it was terrible.
Both Petty and Sanders chose to rebuild, and that meant wading through red tape. They say their experiences in Joplin and in Tuscaloosa were different in some ways, but similar in others. Back at City Hall in Joplin, Mayor Seibert says his city chose to issue building permits fast.
One of the things that we've just really worked hard on is just to take care of our own, but to do that in a manner in which that people can try to get back to their normal lives as quickly as they can.
That's not how Tuscaloosa did it.
We ask that you just sign in here. We've got cards. Please fill out to us what you like, what you love.
Mayor Walt Maddox chose to slow the process down and bring in consultants. Following the tornado, residents filed past drawings of proposed urban centers mixing residential and retail space. Maddox says Tuscaloosa wasn't worried about losing residents like Joplin if homes weren't rebuilt quickly.
Coupled on top of that, the 12.5% of the city that was destroyed, a large portion of that was economically depressed. So we knew we had an opportunity to remake these areas if we could slow down and be strategic. We had time. We were not under a housing crunch.
But a different kind of crunch came in the press. A year after the storm, the Wall Street Journal ran an article critical of Maddox's slow building route compared to Joplin's speedier approach. The mayor still bristles at that story.
The people of Tuscaloosa went through hell and back, and they deserved a rebuilding plan that mattered, that was going to improve this community now and into the future. And I'm glad that this city decided to be part of that. And when the challenge came, we had the courage of our convictions to see it through.
But 5 years after the fact, how did each city do? Between customers at Express Oil Change, Brian Sanders says his experience with City Hall in Tuscaloosa was just okay.
I know they wanted to put a park in. I know they wanted to put several certain businesses in, but it was frustrating to think that we might have to move, because this part of town is home to us, and it's been real good to us over the years, and it would have definitely affected our business.
Back at Frank's Tavern in Joplin, Judy Petty remembers her run-ins with City Hall.
A little bit hard to get along with, but in the long run, it turned out okay.
So Joplin built back fast, and Tuscaloosa went slow. Ironically, 5 years after both tornadoes, neither city says it's fully recovered, and it could take 5 to 10 years to finish the work. Ultimately, we asked Petty and Sanders how they're doing 5 years after the storms.
I'm happy with it. My husband would have been very pleased with it, so it turned out good. Did good.
We're doing more cars than we did before. We're doing, as far as revenue, our revenue is up considerably. We're offering more services than we used to offer. You know, we sell tires and do alignments now. We didn't have the room for that before.
And that may say it all.
It was devastating when we first saw it. And, you know, all the windows were out. Most of the roof was off.
I kept on telling the tornado, get, go, move, go. And I watched it when I seen it when it came, but it surprised me because it was my first time ever in my life seeing one.
All three of my cousins was out there, and now they're gone. We can't find them.
Wind out of the west at 14 now.
On April 27th, 2011, local TV weathercasters helped spread the word on where tornadoes were and where they were going. But what happens when the weatherman becomes a victim of the severe weather while he's on the air? Here's APR's Mackenzie Bates.
Ask anyone in the TV news business, and they'll tell you people tune in mostly for the weather.
Already happening now in Hayleyville's that cold front moves in slowly from the northwest.
And on WVUA-TV, that's Richard Scott's job. Some days it's hot, some days there's rain. Then there was April 27th, 2011.
Again, we're looking at a large wedge tornado on the west side of Tuscaloosa, moving into the city of Tuscaloosa right now.
I have no idea. I can't answer this to this day. I had a cold chill running down my spine, especially when the tornado got as large as it did. The tornado appeared to be weakening for a brief amount of time, and then what we call a wedge tornado, a very wide tornado, just sat down. The most scary feeling you can imagine I had running through my mind, through my body, just the feeling that this tornado is going to kill people.
It looks like it's going to be moving over us pretty shortly. Again, we're looking
all of our forecast model data over 7 days out was showing the exact same scenario, the chance for widespread severe weather, a classic tornado outbreak, and that's really unusual. Typically, we have numerous computer models that kind of disagree with each other. When you see that consistency and the look of severe weather, that is concerning, especially in April.
And again, this is going to be moving into University of Alabama campus very shortly. Get in your safe place. I cannot stress the urgency of this storm. This is an emergency situation for downtown Tuscaloosa. We're going to stay on air as long as we can.
What hit Tuscaloosa was an EF4 tornado. That's a weather term called the Enhanced Fujita Scale. It means a storm packing winds anywhere between 166 to 200 miles per hour.
We're getting power glitches. Again, I'm Chief Meteorologist Richard Scott. We're watching a deadly situation for the city of Tuscaloosa.
While delivering his report, Scott noticed the path of the tornado was heading to a familiar site. He was living in a house off 16th Avenue in Tuscaloosa, putting home sweet home in the crosshairs of the twister.
When I saw what had happened, now this was about 10 minutes after the tornado hit, took off towards my house because I knew a director of a TV station was staying there for a while, and I could not contact him. The cell phones were down. My fear was that I was going to go to my house and find him dead.
That him was his roommate, Jonathan Newman.
I got to be honest, that was probably the happiest I've ever been to see Richard in my life was when I saw him come walking in the rug.
We joined Newman at the site where the house he and Scott shared once stood. The old house is gone and a new one is in its place. Newman works for a television station in nearby Birmingham now. On April 27th, 2011, he was just one of those people hanging on for dear life.
Living here for a few years, I got used to there being tornadoes in the area, but always either, you know, going south of us, north of us, just never really hitting right in the middle of Tuscaloosa. So I kind of had that mindset of just that it's not going to hit here.
Newman says it went from being sunny outside to almost pitch black in what felt like seconds.
I run across the house, jump in the tub, and as I'm falling in, I grab the shower curtain, and that literally is all I had on top of me. About 5 seconds after I fall in the tub, the window in the bathroom goes out. At that point, that's when I thought that was probably it, because I see the roof lifting off, and I think either I'm going to get sucked up through the roof or something's going to come flying in on top of me, and all I've got on top of me is a shower curtain.
Standing in what was once his old neighborhood, he recalled how not everyone got off lucky.
All the houses on this side of the street were pretty much destroyed. Amazingly, some of the houses right across the street were barely touched. Like, some of the shingles got knocked off, but their windows were still intact. And it was just amazing how, like, just across the street, some houses were almost unaffected. And then on this side of the street, it was just almost complete destruction.
And even though their house was destroyed, Newman and Scott took solace knowing they were both alive.
It was like, all right. Glad to see somebody. Somebody I know, some way I can actually hopefully get out of here, because at that point I felt trapped because I felt like, you know, didn't know where I could go to get out of here.
And if you thought Scott had plenty to worry about back in 2011, 2016 offers a new perspective.
Where's Dad?
He's a dad now. Scott and his wife Tara welcomed their first child, Parker, in October of last year. Tara Scott says when Richard talks about bad weather and staying safe, he means her and Parker too.
Now that I know we have a safe place to go, I know he's going to keep us updated. If we don't need to be at the house, he tells me well enough in advance to where I can go to my parents or a friend's house to make sure I am in a safe place.
It's been 5 years since Scott watched his own house be smashed by the tornado. So as Tuscaloosa recovers, he thinks he is too.
The scar is slowly healing. And that's an incredible thing to experience. I've been here since the tornado, and to see that change every day has been a heartwarming experience, to see that, hey, people are coming back. We're not going to let a tornado get us down. We're going to make it back out of this.
What I tell everybody is I feel just fine, but I ain't right at this point in time.
We've seen a lot of lacerations, cuts, abrasions, that kind of thing for people who've been digging out from the rubble. We've had a variety of people who have stepped on or gotten punctured by nails. We're giving a lot of tetanus for that.
Well, we initially responded to 15th and McFarland, that intersection. Basically, we just started pulling everybody out of houses and rubble that we could.
Phil Campbell 3 to 911. I got rotation coming through Phil Campbell right now.
I'm APR's Stan Ingold. Tuscaloosa wasn't the only town in Alabama hit on April 27, 2011. An EF5 twister leveled much of Phil Campbell in the northwest part of the state.
Get someplace safe! Teddy, run out! Let's get someplace safe!
You can see it looks like land has been cleared, especially this area we're fixing to go to over here.
Police Chief Merrill Potter and I drove around Phil Campbell to survey the damage.
You can tell there used to be houses there.
1 year later, Potter says things were looking better.
I have a feeling of camaraderie that came together when our town got hit. Neighbors became neighbors, something we hadn't seen in a while. And what's great about that is that feeling is lingering on. The neighbors that became neighbors are still neighbors.
Now he says the reality is finally setting in.
And I believe we've accepted that fact that, you know, some things are gone, it's not going to be back.
One of the things that did come back was the Phil Campbell High School. It's considered by many to be the heart and soul of the town. Principal Gary Odom says the original building was heavily damaged in the storms and had to be torn down.
But the worst part of it was when we were moving out of the mobile units, getting into the churches. You know, we had three churches. We had to divide grades up. We had, 11th and 12th going to one, 9th and 10th in one, 7th and 8th in another.
Shuffling from one location to another is all behind them now, and students in Phil Campbell are in a state-of-the-art facility. Before we even asked, Odom says it's stormproof.
There's a storm shelter that will serve every student that we have, plus, you know, some extra room. We've got it organized enough that each grade can be in a room. It just works out good for us, and we feel safe.
When APR first covered the Phil Campbell disaster, we were told the story of Alex Jackson. She was in ninth grade at Phil Campbell High School when the storms hit.
I watched them get a body out from under a tree, and I mean, it was just like, it just hit me. People are gone. People's houses are gone. Nothing's going to be the same. I mean, my brother lost two friends, and I mean, I've never seen my brother break down like that.
We caught up with Alex a year later to see how she was doing.
I still think about it, but it's like I don't know how to explain it, but like that's the reason that we're here. It's just like we've came so far, I guess, from pulling bodies and just getting emotionally stable again. And I mean, watching that was hard, but now it's just kind of like, well, it's over. Here we are.
As we sit in the Memorial Park in the center of town, Alex says she's changed as well and still recalls what it was like the following day.
When you're living it, it is nothing like what you see in the news. I remember coming back here the day after, and it just looked like a movie set. It didn't look real. Like, this was not the place I was yesterday. April 26th, this is not where I was at.
While many people would seek out counseling after an event like this, Jackson says that just isn't her.
No, I'm pretty much the counselor. I'm who people talk to, like all my friends, they come to me. They come to me for anything, whether it be about storm or completely something else personal. That's me.
It wiped out our entire neighborhood, down to the slats, to the concrete slats. I mean, there's nothing left. So as you can imagine, we're back there yelling, screaming. It was a horrific night. It was.
Last night, my wife and I drove back in after dark. And, you know, it's still dark here. There's not many street lights. And so we still haven't gotten used to the darkness.
I remember standing beside where Krispy Kreme stood, and I could smell the donuts, but the building was rubble.
The signature is going to be just north of Centerville and Brent. This is Highway 5, and this is the inflow notch, and the possible tornado is in this area right here.
I'm APR's Alex Aubuchon. Up to now, we've been looking at the past and present. Now, here's a look at the future. This is how your daily weather forecasts wind up.
So that will play an impact as to what goes on here in the Huntsville area.
And this is where that forecast starts. It's a beautiful spring day in Huntsville now, but a group of forecasters and other scientists are laser-focused on what's coming tomorrow. All their models suggest severe weather on the horizon and the potential for strong tornadoes. The National Weather Service forecasters and emergency managers seem concerned, but other scientists seem almost hopeful. Or maybe hopeful isn't the right word.
It's kind of a unfortunately question. We certainly don't want to see the destruction, but we do need the storms in order to conduct our research.
Tony Liza is a PhD candidate at the University of Alabama at Huntsville and one of the main researchers in Vortex Southeast, a massive study examining severe weather and how tornadoes form, specifically in the southeastern U.S.
Short baseline with Armour and Purdue.
The Vortex in Vortex Southeast stands for the Verification of Origin of Rotation in Tornadoes Experiment, which is why we'll just call it Vortex from now on. Heading the project is Dr. Eric Rasmussen. He designed this study from the ground up and led two previous Vortex research projects in Oklahoma in the mid-90s and late 2000s. Rasmussen says when the funding for Vortex Southeast was announced, there was some controversy. Lots of scientists say tornadoes are tornadoes, no matter where they occur.
And in fact, tornadoes probably pretty much are tornadoes. But how a thunderstorm causes a tornado and supports a tornado, those things vary radically from one part of the country to the other. In the plains, they're done by supercells, these big, long, live, rotating storms. In the southeast, they seem to spring up a lot more quickly from storms that are a lot less well-defined.
And so the researchers came to Alabama. Dark and early the next morning, the teams headed out to rural spots across North Alabama to gather data that they hope will lead to a much better understanding of southeastern storms. But Rasmussen says no matter how much of the science they understand, there's another factor at play.
That really does people no good if they don't receive the information, or if they don't know how to interpret it, or if they don't know how to react to it, or if they don't have shelter.
One of the main reasons the Vortex Southeast study got funded is the extremely high number of tornado-related fatalities that occur in the Southeast. Even though the majority of tornadoes occur on the Great Plains, the vast majority of tornado deaths are concentrated in the Southeast. Why is this happening? Researchers have some likely culprits. One is population density.
In Alabama, people live on every dirt road. There's always a church.
That's Kevin Laws, Science and Operations Officer at the National Weather Service in Birmingham.
You're going to have someone be impacted by almost every tornado in the Southeast, and that's a big difference between here and the Plains.
Another issue, according to Dr. Laura Myers with the University of Alabama's Center for Advanced Public Safety, is the infrastructure in the area.
We have a lot of manufactured homes, mobile homes, so there's a lot of vulnerability, and so you're going to have more fatalities with poor infrastructure.
Another problem is terrain. Trees and other obstructions don't just block radar from seeing storms, they keep the people in the path of that storm in the dark as well.
And so they may waste their lead time trying to figure out if it's really coming, and it may be too late because we can't see them coming.
But no matter how good the forecasting becomes, even Dr. Myers doubts they'll get to everyone.
And the public will get upset that we've gone to wall-to-wall coverage, we're interrupting Dancing with the Stars, they don't want to know about it. And that's going to hold true across the board. And we can't change the minds of those people.
5 years out from April 27th, 2011, that doesn't seem to be a problem in Tuscaloosa.
Hello, if y'all want to come sign in.
ABC 3340 in Birmingham sent their weather team to Tuscaloosa earlier this month for a citizen storm spotter training class. In a huge riverfront building, there was hardly an empty seat in the house.
Everybody make room. We are filling up fast. Are these seats reserved? There's three spots up front.
Today, I mean, you see, not even an open seat, so that's awesome to see. And also it says a lot about Tuscaloosa.
ABC 3340 weekend meteorologist Megan Thomas was a student at the University of Alabama on April 27, 2011. She says she saw firsthand how important a basic understanding of severe weather can be.
Like a lot of my sorority sisters, they didn't really understand weather. Everyone was panicking. Everyone didn't know what they were looking at or know how to be safe. And I've always said, if you know how something forms and what to look for, you'll be safer.
An informed and weather-aware public helps TV meteorologists do their jobs better, but they still rely on the National Weather Service for the best and latest data. And those meteorologists are hopeful that Vortex will help them make their best even better. Here's John DeBlock.
We're hoping that with Vortex that they'll get into the nitty-gritty details of the data and indeed confirm perhaps some of the things that we've confirmed here locally. That will enable the other offices in the Southeast, hopefully, to pick up on those clues about the difference in the storms from the Midwest to the Southeast and issue better warnings for the folks in the Southeast.
The next step is making sure the public is equipped and informed enough to react to those warnings. Based on the turnout in Tuscaloosa, it looks like we're off to a good start. I'm Alex Aubuchon. For Pat Duggins, Stan Ingold, Mackenzie Bates, and all of us at Alabama Public Radio, thanks for tuning in, and good night.